Chair, and I sincerely hope that all the members have got copies of the report. Chair, just the outline of the presentation, we'll give a review of the development of the policies and programs, and then a couple of issues, particularly in relation to key issues around what occurred during the fourth quarter, particularly on the consolidation of the human settlements, DFIs, the delivery of the housing opportunities, administrative matters, sector capacity building initiatives, departmental overall expenditure, and then recommendations. Chair, just to go through the issues, one of the key focus areas of the department at the moment is the revision as well as the review of some of the policies, particularly and in the fourth quarter. What the department can report is that the beneficiary allocations policy was developed for consultation, and that's particularly in relation to the response around issues around conflict and allegations of maladministration as well as poor management and administration of the waiting lists. Then the second part there, the second policy that we're looking at is the preemptive clause on basis beneficiary ownership, which is under revision and is being presented for consultation to the provinces and municipalities. The preemptive clause, Chair, members, is particularly in relation to the eight-year preemptive clause on the sale of subsidized housing. Chair, then we also have completed the draft CRU, that's the Community Residential Unit Policy, for revision and for consultation. We also are in the process of revising the Housing Code. One of the key issues that we're looking at as a department, particularly in relation to issues of land, basically acquisition, development, and release of land for human settlement. And there's a policy that we have developed, including a compensation policy for that with regard to SOIs, SOCs. Then the social housing program and IRDP is currently subject to an evaluation. Okay, one of the things that we have been requested and in consultation with National Treasury is that the social housing program as well as the integrated residential program, we need to determine the value for money aspects related to those. Chair, one of the key issues, as the committee is aware, we made a presentation during the course of the first quarter just to indicate that on the consolidation of the development finance institutions, there's a substantial amount of work that has been done on this. A tax proposal for exempting the single DFI from income tax was tabled and supported by the Minister of Finance, you know, in the fourth quarter as part of the budget speech for 2016-2017. During the fourth quarter, we did also commence with the appointment of a service provider to facilitate the operational integration. Members will know that the RALF, the Rural Housing Loan Fund, NURTURE, as well as the NHFC, we're commencing with the operational integration. Chair, one of the issues around the DFIs, or the Consolidated Human Settlements Development Bank, as we refer to it, is that it will have a legislative basis, and we've commenced with the drafting of that process. Part of the process linked to bullet point two is also to commence with the consolidation of the board. So it is expected at the end of this, the second quarter of 2016-2017, the three boards will be consolidated. Chair, slide five just gives an indication of what the summary of the delivery of housing opportunities. In relation to the catalytic projects, there are 63 catalytic projects that are being evaluated for technical and project execution. A human settlements infrastructure development plan was drafted, and the projects identified were mapped in line with six and seven. That's in terms of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee. Okay, we also need to to indicate that 460 feasibilities were conducted for informal settlements upgrading. The department supporting both provinces and municipalities. Then there's also 51 informal settlement upgrading plans that have been developed. So that's the plan that municipalities and provinces can use to upgrade informal settlements. During the quarter, 14,266 title deeds were issued to new homeowners in the subsidy sector, and then also 12,553 PHP units or people's housing process units were delivered in 5 provinces. The delivery for the quarter, Chair, and that's on slide 6, just gives you an indication of what the quarter 4 targets were for service sites. Was 21,000, however the provinces delivered 16,000. The quarter 4 targets for houses were 34,000, and the houses completed was 27,000. The differential in relation to what was estimated in terms of the total for sites and houses was 55,000, however provinces delivered 44,000. The delivery for April, and I think this is just the summary for the period 1st of April 2015 to March 31st of March. Chair, of consequence, and I think it's the last column on the right, where it says 750. Chair, what we can indicate is that figure represents an increase of the over the last period. You will remember in the previous quarter, 1st of April 2015 to March 2015. So 1st of April 2014 to 31st March 2015, we delivered 143,000. You'll know that one of the issues that we indicated and Minister Adeji had made a commitment was to turn that graph around. So what we can say is that we've arrested that decline, so we've delivered 152,750, which is an increase. It's a modest increase, however, Chair, what we can indicate is probably the expectation that if we put our efforts, we can turn that graph to get to what we wanted to was an annual delivery of approximately 200,000 per year. Chair, that's the delivery for this next slide just gives an indication of what the annual targets in relation to the outstanding delivery. So what we need to just indicate is we had an annual target in terms of the business plans provided by the provinces was 167,000. So provinces indicated that they would deliver 167,846. However, we managed to deliver 152. So that's why I was being chair. I suppose we didn't reach our target, yet we managed to turn the graph. So I think that's the important thing in relation to what we wanted to demonstrate. Chair, that slide is repeated. The military veterans, Chair, as indicated, we were requested on previous occasions to provide what we've delivered and what the provinces have delivered for. So for 15-16, there were 204 units that were delivered to military veterans. Chair, in relation to additional issues that we are dealing with, which we on a quarterly basis also do provide comprehensive reports to the portfolio on the revitalization of the mining towns. There's 36 informal settlements in the Northwest, Free State, Gauteng, and Limpopo, which received full upgrading, which includes rapid formalization and full services. That's water, sanitation, and title. Then 98 informal settlements in the Northwest, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Gauteng, and Northern Cape received interim basic services, which resulted in formalization. And then 89 informal settlements in the Northwest Free State, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Gauteng, and Northern Cape received emergency basic services, resulting in relocation. We'll just indicate chair as well on page on slide 12, feasibility studies for Naledi and Lesedi mining projects in Skies Tshwete in Mpumalanga were conducted. And then in the Marikana Integrated Housing Initiative, there were 189 rental housing and 200 PNG units delivered. We also indicated that in those provinces, as indicated in bullet 3, we are providing provinces with institutional and technical planning intervention. And you'll see that one of the things that we're having to deal with is trying to resolve issues of less than satisfactory performance, particularly in the provinces and municipalities, and particularly the metro municipalities. And then we've established partnerships with mining companies. As part of the process, and this is on slide 13, Chair, particularly in relation to the revitalization of mining towns, we have concluded an MOU, or in the process of concluding an MOU between the department, the HDA, the DBSA, where the DBSA will assist with project preparation, funding, infrastructure, loan funding, and front loading of infrastructure grants, because this is one of the issues of pipeline, which is a strategy that we've said we must put in place to increase and improve delivery. Chair, the next couple of slides just gives an indication, slide 14, on what the sector capacity building initiatives are being implemented. Chair, we've indicated, and I think as part of the processes, to resolve some of the sector capacity and poor performances, we have initiated sector capacity building initiatives, particularly in relation to the 1,800 youth, and then the youth being trained in skills including engineering, town planning, and placed in the various provinces, and that we can give the details of that. Then, Chair, in relation to youth on artisan skills in KZN, and then the last bullet point on that slide 15, Chair, that we've got 192 students who have been registered for undergraduate degrees in human settlements development at Nelson Mandela Metro University, Forte, and UNISA, and that's funded through Department Operational as well as the LCCTA collaboration. We also, Chair, not only focused in relation to the universities but also the technicons. So in relation to the built environment, we funded 50 students in built environment studies at Mangosuthu. And then 71 students registered in built environment at different universities funded through the department scholarship programs. Chair, one of the issues that we are in the process of dealing with is the needs database, and at an appropriate time we'll present that to the portfolio of what we've been able to achieve, particularly in that quarter. And then the IT governance to address the issues that have been raised by the AG, particularly on veracity and the integrity of the information. Chair, then we've also indicated as part of the department's communication and departmental programs, and that includes the BNG series, billboard, and community engagements, and then we've also developed a human resources plan. Chair, then we've got the departmental expenditure, and the CFO will carry on with that.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, good morning, Chair. Let me apologise for joining the meeting late. I will take the members through the expenditure of the Department of Human Settlements as the closing year 31 March 2016. Chair, I think we did indicate to the House at first that we were running the budget for 2015-16 by 30.5 billion, and we closed the year by 98% at the most, with the underspending of 501 million. And I think as we go through, we will be indicating which programs did not fare very well, and obviously the highest being at the housing development finance, and simply because of the grants and the subsidies that have been transferred to our entities as well as our provincial departments and metropolitan municipalities. If you look at the very same slides that we're looking at on the board, it tells you to say at a budget of 30.5 billion, we closed even the year by the commitments of 10 million rather. But the expenditure to that is a chairperson ran to the tune of 30 billion and 42 million rand. And the variance of 501 rand, it cuts across all the programs, but with the major one being at housing development program, which is program 4, at 437, simply because we couldn't transfer the money to the HDA at the end of the financial year, as well as the money to the social housing regulator from the operational part and from the RCG point of view. So those two funds could not be transferred due to the pipeline project that could not be finalized at the time of the readiness of those projects. However, those funds were also requested, Chair, for rollover, which we are still awaiting approval thereof. From the administrative point to the Program 3, Chairperson, I think there's categories of the youth fund that could also not be transferred simply because we could not finalize the service level agreement by the year 31 March 2016. And we also requested a rollover to that effect, and it's still awaited. Some of the funds may not require a request for rollover because they are of an administrative nature. So when we look at Program 1, we closed the year by 94%, the lowest being at Program 3, whereby we were running very short in terms of our NASP program, your national upgrading program for the upgrading of informal settlements. There we had challenges with the start of the program, and where we also had challenges with some of the metros that could not approve our plans to those informal settlement programs that were earmarked for that financial year. However, the situation is changing in this financial year. This is a bit of a program, as we shall see as we move towards the first quarter of the 2016-17. So when we look at that 2%, it varies from the number of programs or sub-programs that could not perform. But I think when we look at 98%, and in contrast to the previous financial year, which we don't have a figure here, the percentage increased by 0.5%. Although we don't pride ourselves because we were hoping to spend 100%, but circumstances beyond the department's control in terms of the entities that could not provide the full details of information that was required for us to transfer the funds. So the element of responsibility and accountability from the Director General has to be undertaken. The next slide, Chairperson, it talks to the operational budget by program, and where we say we take out the issue of the grants and the entities. This is just an operational budget of the department where it tackles the issues of administrative nature, your personal costs, and your goods and services, and any other costs that related to the running of the office from an operational point of view. So we were sitting at 688 million. In so much as we had spent 625 million of that amount to the tune of 91%. And I think, Chair, from the element that I indicated earlier in terms of the variances and in terms of the programs that could not spend, it points out to say that the waste from the administration was the issue of our investigation units that could not be finalized, and we could not actually pay some of the investigations that went through, and they had to overlap in this financial year. And I must indicate, Chair, to that effect, the SIU money was also requested for a rollover to the financial year. We leave over 10 to the 77%, as you see it from the previous slide. It stands out to say the NASP program affected the program 3 in general. So now when we look at our operational budget against the capital budget, which we took over your entity's money in terms of the subsidies that we transferred to your HDA, your SHRA, as well as the CISO from the department's point of view entities, we would be left with an amount of 600 from the operational point. And again, as you take out your capacity grant, your USDG grant, as well as your HSDG grant, then it gives you a pay of 688 as an operational budget. The next slide that is also ending the budget of 2015-16, it gives you the exact scenario of the how the budget is constituted from the issue of the transfer payment. The human settlements grant in detail will be focused towards the end of the slide. We had a budget of 18 billion, that is 18.3 billion. The expenditure to that effect from our nature point, because we transferred it entirely to all the provinces, it also emanated from an expenditure of 18.3 billion. Your urban settlement development grant, again, to the tune of 10.5 billion, we transferred the entire amount to provinces and constitute 100%. The capacity grant share that I must emphasize that it ended state 1 March 26 was at the value of 100 million. We also transferred it to the municipalities, selected municipalities or so, and the spending pertinent to that gave us 100%. Now the entities that I spoke of, and you would recall from my earlier statement, it was the issue of the institutional investment grant, which we could not transfer to the SHRA, of the Social Housing Regulator Authority rather. Similarly with the restructuring settlement grant that I pointed out earlier, that was affected by the pipeline project. Only 109 of that was transferred to those projects that were ready to be carried out by the Social Regulator Authority. Then we had transferred the entire amount to our CISOs and constitute 100%. The capital and other capital funds, that is for National Housing Finance Corporation as well, then the HDA, which only had 71 million that could not be transferred. Similarly, because of the fact that the request was requested late at the end of the year, and by the time we were preparing the payment, it was the 31st of March already. So that's the whole entire amount that constituted, or rather contributed to the understanding of the department. But if you look at the last, which is departmental obligations, we had better scheme that ran to the tune of 84%. Your UN Habitat, which is an obligator for all the departments, including human settlements, that is a subsidy or a subscription rather, to the tune of 1,368,000. And that constituted our 100% in terms of our transfer. The next slide to be taken through to the members is the issue of the development settlement grant, which is the grant that is running the housing development in the metros as well as in our provinces. The budget to that effect, as I indicated, is 18.2 billion. But if you look at the movements that we had during the year, simply because of the request that was requested from National Treasury, the redirecting of funds in the process, reallocation of funds to the provinces that had a capacity to spend, in contrast to other provinces that could not spend at the time that they needed to have spent, including the rollover that we had received during the financial year 2015-16. The entire grant went to 18.3 billion with all the movement. But I must indicate that, Chairperson, from the 400 million, that money was received from National Treasury from a reallocated fund from the Social Housing Regulator Authority as well, and we had to adjust to the Eastern Cape allocation to that effect. If you look at the Eastern Cape, it was from 1.9 to 2.4 because of the adjustment. Craft housing, it was a rigorous process, of which we did explain to the House during the course of the year that the province could not spend the entire grant at the time of our assessment, and the recovery plan that was given at that point in time still indicated that they would not be in a position to spend 908 million. So the 908 million was taken away from Gauteng and redirected to KZN to the tune of 308 million, which took the budget of KZN from 3.2 to 3.5. Similarly with the Northern Cape as well as the Northwest, by an approximate amount of 100 million to both provinces, which consequently took their budget to 480 million and 2.1 respectively. I must correct myself because the budget then it was 18.6 that we are reporting at. However, from the element of what we had transferred is the entire budget of 18.3 because of the rollovers that were already with the provinces that would have been Limpopo at the 308 million as well as Mpumalanga. But the reporting to this effect takes a toll of 18.6 billion. If we look at that whole amount, the provinces managed to spend by the year end 18.1, we can sum up to 18.2, which left the entire 500 million not to have been spent by provinces by the year end. But when we look at the entire amount, we knew that we were going to request the rollover. We couldn't request the rollover for holding of the tune of 23.3 million. There was a time delay factor to that effect. The only amount that was looked at by National Treasury, and at the time of us requesting National Treasury to give us a feedback in terms of that, was that there was principal approval in terms of the Limpopo province as well as the Northern Cape, together with the 4.1 of Eastern Cape. So we are awaiting a final approval, rather in a confirmed letter from National Treasury suggesting to say of the 500 million that has been approved, 368, not even 468, to the tune of 398 would go to Limpopo, 4.2 would go to Eastern Cape, as well as 3.8 would go to Northern Cape. These amounts as rollovers, although in principle for now, would form part of the 2016-17 allocation to those respective provinces. So when we closed the books of the Human Settlement Development Grant, it was closed by a percentage of 97%, leaving 500 million to be requested for rollover for some of the provinces. As we move further, and I think this has been a standard practice, Chair, we would indicate to the House that you would have those milestones that take the budget of the Human Settlement Development Grant but don't use or don't yield new opportunities. You would have your EDVS, your rectification program, the OPSCAP, which is sitting at 5% and it's pretty standard. Your land hectares, although you would get some units on it, but don't contribute to new opportunities, and the disaster relief fund, which is earmarked within the same grant. Those funds as been allocated in the previous year amounted to 1.7 billion of the 18.2 in the allocation. Now, if you look at the delivery performance to that effect, we had units delivered to the effect of 15,374 from the site of the disaster relief fund. The total expenditure to date, unfortunately, it went more than the allocation that was given to those effects of the funds allocated. But funds had to be moved around by provinces to cover the costs that were more than the allocation to date. The next slide talks to the upgrading of informal settlements in mining times to emphasize. We had only three, we have only three in the fund. The next slide, Neville, would talk to the next one. Yes, it's the first stage where you would have the areas of Machabeng at the budget of 75 million, and that was gazetted, so to say, and a chair perhaps. For everyone in the House, when we talk of the issues of EMR funds, we always emphasize in terms of your Division of Revenue Act, and it so requires that we gazette funds as per the EMR. So there's a column that talks to funds allocated in terms of gazetting. However, in terms of the business plan, because of the needs, the funds would differ from the ones that have been gazetted. If you look at Free State, and I won't take all the provinces, but I think the principle applies. The fact that Free State has 75 and 780 units targeted for that financial year, the amount that was required to that effect was 158 million, and that was the amount that was in the business plan. The delivery to that, this expenditure also differs, because it tells you to say the cost probably that was used at the point was higher than the one that was earmarked for each to have been allocated in a budget of 158 million. So 210 was spent to that effect. If you go down, we did not have anything from Gauteng in terms of the performance, although there were funds. And some of these funds are the funds that we had to redirect to the provinces as indicated earlier on. You look at your Limpopo, there's Greater Tubazi, Elias Mozalehi, Yonipalale, and Sitakomi that contributed 1,114 units to the value of 39 to 8.8 across all those areas. So it goes to the other mining towns, your Mpumalanga, your Northern Cape Chairperson, your Northwest. And if we all look at all these, the grand total that has been spent against the upgrading of informal settlements in mining towns contributed the expenditure of 1.3 or 1.4 if we sum it against the budget of 2.2. But if you look closely into the funds that have been allocated as well as the funds that have been gazetted, there's a variation that one would determine to say there are reasons behind us having this variance amount, particularly from the elements of the funds that have been allocated, given the fact that more money was needed to achieve the size as well as the units that have been targeted for that particular financial year, although the expenditure to that effect dropped to 1.3. The next slide talks to FLISP. We do admit that FLISP as a program did not run very well in the previous financial year. The ball game is going to shift, and I think at the better stage the DG will explain why I'm talking that language. But if you look at the provinces that have implemented FLISP, we had 7 provinces in exception of the Northwest, little from the element of the Northern Cape. The funds allocated to this program for the financial year of the units between size and targets and units to the target were 265 million. Only units were achieved without any size, although there were sites that have been targeted for Gauteng and KZN. But if you look at the number of units, we're even closer to the units that have been targeted. It was a small number, given the fact that this program is running at a snail pace, but I think there was a better achievement of the FLISP given its snail pace as a program in terms of provinces. However, the budget also ran to the budget of 98.8 million today. We had rectification that was a thorny issue in terms of last year and in terms of our first date as well, which we did explain to the House. We were also worried about the cost per unit in terms of the rectification of the units that have been rectified. If one looks at the funds that have been allocated versus or in contrast to the expenditure, there was a big gap of 300 M net if you look at the 171 against the 788. And this is where we had contestations to say when a province does not budget for a program and finds itself spending, it needed to have explained because it was not in the program. The primary case being our first stage at the delivery performance of 370 to the cost of 108. Then you would have had Eastern Cape having rectified more than the number of units that they had targeted, and the budget was even more than the funds that were allocated, by far the most, 200M. And then you would have your KZN that was within the reach, having achieved the highest units, rather in cost, in terms of the cost of a lower magnitude of 157. But if you sum this whole thing and you look at your northwest, the funds allocated were 14. They had rectified 880 with no plan to that effect, but with an amount of 19. And I must indicate and qualify to say, obviously it differs from what is being rectified within the unit that is being planned to be rectified. And your Eastern Cape having spent, after the Western Cape having spent 8 million of the 11 that they had targeted, with 276. So the total of the units that have been rectified in the financial year ended 31 March was 8,251 to the tune of 700. The CAPEX, which we did say the 5%, and the 5% allocation was 910 of your 8.2 billion. However, what has been allocated, because they were minimizing costs to the operational capital budget of the grant. Provinces were very smart on this one. They allocated 805, which was below the 5% maximum amount, but the expenditure to that effect was 768. So this is where the maintenance and the monitoring and evaluation of project management to the project is kicking off, and projects were not compromised despite the fact that there was a cut in terms of the 5%. The disaster went to a number of provinces, which is an earmark between the allocation to the tune of 453,552,000, that will be the next slide, was spent to that effect. The next chair talks to the Urban Settlement Development Grant, the grant that is transferred to our metropolitan municipalities. As of 31 March, which was not the year end to, or rather for the metro, we closed the year for the Department of Human Settlement Province and National with the 811 for the provinces being transferred already. But at the time of this report, and as we closed the year, metros had spent 52% of the USDG. And I think at that time, Chair, we must indicate that we were very worried as to the 3 months remaining for the metros to would be able to spend the money by June 2016. Given the fact that there were many challenges in terms of their procurement processes, at that time they had already adjusted their budget to the programs that they actually thought that the budget would be highly spent on them. But at that point in time, there was nothing that the department could do. It had to close its book by the 52%. But obviously, when we look at the metros, their financial year was still open from April, May, and June. And I think in the next presentation, we would be able to see how metros have fared in terms of the USDG by the end of this financial year, 30 June, that had ended for all the metros. So when we look at the voted funds, it was 10.5 from the beginning as initially indicated. Then we had rollovers that were of the city of Cape Town, city of Tshwane, your Ekurhuleni, your Mangaung, as well as the Buffalo City. The tune of the rollover amount was 806 million. The total amount available for metros that needed to have been spent by 30 June 2016 amounts to 3.4 or 3.3 at the most. And we had transferred all these funds from our side because at that time the payment schedule was allowing us to have transferred for us to close the books. So as I indicated, we closed the books with the percentage spent by provinces against the money that had been available within the reach of the metros was 52%. At that time, we were still sitting with 47 to be managed within the 3 months remaining for metros. The next slide talks to the financial performance where the HSDG is being allocated by the metros in terms of the departments and in terms of the programs that the metros are running. If you look at the issue of all those restrictions, it does tell you to say you have your Re-Akhatswane as a program, not as a department, but you have your land acquisition also as a program, your housing as a department, your roads and stormwater, similarly with the office of the city manager as a department. So this is an indication of how the USDG is being split within the metro. While our main focus is at the 11.6, we have a bigger concentration of what develops a human settlement integration within your metro. So there are bigger programs that talk to your land acquisition, your housing, the roads and stormwater, transport, water and electricity, including your electricity and waste management, because it cuts across all the informal settlements that we earmark the services of the upgrading of in the area and developing rural areas. We're not shying away from what economic and rural development would do in terms of the USDG, But I think the category part of it is that what constitutes money for planning towards the human settlement development, or rather the informal settlements within those areas. So the amount of 11.3 was the amount that the metros would report on to the national department as per the rollover and as per the allocation. Another indicator, only the 52 at that time was spent by the metros. Okay, if you look at the capacity grant that I indicated as the last of its kind grant to the metro, the grant was earmarked to capacitate the metros in terms of various resource needs. And you would recall that I did indicate that various metros, the amount that was granted in the financial year 31 March 2016 was 100 million. However, there were some rollovers from the previous financial year because of the start of the capacity grant then, and metros could not spend it. The request for rollover was approved by National Treasury, and we had 221 to that effect. The total available fund for the capacity grant then was 221 million. From our side, we had transferred 100%, and if we look back to the slide, it will constitute 100%. This grant chair, I must indicate, even at that time, and as we look at the figures for 2016-17, it did not perform to the desired effect of what constituted the business plans of the grant itself. Although money was used towards the end of the financial year towards those commitments in terms of the capacity as well as the support, the payment of employees, and I know for the fact that from the metros that we were closely looking at, like Yotswane, Ekurhuleni, as well as the Mangaung, most of the money went to the compensation of employees, the training of the staff, the purchasing of equipment, to the level of the number of people that were employed to provide capacity, particularly for the management and project management of the human settlement department. But Chair, if I may go back, I must indicate that, and I think the DG will also indicate the issues of the funds that we wanted to be taken away from two metros in particular, which is our City of Cape Town and Ekurhuleni, as well as the KZN. We did emphasize that, and this is from the UNDG point of view, Chairman, my apologies to take members backwards, but I would also want my Director General to dwell much on that one, just so that we don't lose sight of why some of the funds could not be spent as we move towards the first quarter of this financial year because of the challenges that the metros had and that persistent for them not to spend by the end of the financial year 2016-17. And through the permission of the Chair, I'll hand over back to the CEO to finalize the summary and conclusion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CFO. If you can then finalize, Mr. Chen, and welcome DG. We saw when you walked in, but unfortunately we couldn't stop the presentation. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Mr. Chen.
Thanks, Chair. Just a couple of more slides. Chair, in relation to this, Chair, I think what we can indicate is the department has strengthened the engagement with provinces, entities, and municipalities. Critical positions have been prioritized in the financial year. Department is working closely with provinces and the municipalities in improving the data, particularly the integrity and the needs database to address challenges existing on that. And then also mechanisms being put into place to ensure that provinces monitor and report accurately by unique name on the number of informal settlements upgraded to phase three, because that's been an issue that we've dealt with. Chair, just in relation to the overall fourth quarter performance, and these are also subject to and will be part of the annual performance, the department managed to achieve 80% of its targets. There were 18% of the targets partially achieved and 2% not achieved. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cheney. So that we get an overall picture, can we then go straight to the first quarter? So that then we can, when we ask questions and clarity, we know the overall picture of what is happening. Can you do that?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, this is the first quarter for April 2016 to June 2016. Chair, the outline is as indicated and standard as per the previous presentation, so that there's a consistency. Chair, in relation to the policy, a significant number of stakeholders were consulted on the draft discussion document, and this is particularly in relation to the draft discussion document on the white paper for human settlements, and this includes provinces, sector departments, local government, banks, academic institutions, entities, and other non-governmental organizations. There is a roundtable discussion on finance and human settlements was held to enhance the process and the content quality, particularly in relation to the chapter in the draft white paper on finance and the leveraging of finance. Further in relation to the policy, and this is on slide 4, there were roundtable discussions on planning, design, and development of the human settlements. And Chair, you will see that one of the key issues here is particularly around the policy issues, because it's ensuring and the department is desirous to ensure that the draft white paper will be presented during the course of this term, and hopefully towards the end of the second quarter there will be a draft that will be presented to Minister and Cabinet in relation to that. We also are, and that's the last bullet point on this slide, is the review of the housing code is commenced, and programs in the code are being reviewed by the department and province. Chair, I think this is particularly in relation to this, to the issues that have been raised on rectification, on the CRU, on the value for money, as well as issues of compliance, which has been lacking, particularly at provincial and municipal level. Chair, a consultation with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform on the prevention of the illegal, on the amendment to the PI 2016 was consulted, was held. And then also the required socioeconomic impact assessment was conducted on the Property Practitioners Bill for 2016. And the DPME issued and the required SAIR certificate for the tabling of the bill before the social protections. Apologies for that error on that, Chair, for the Human Settlements Development Trust, and we will introduce that into Cabinet and the Parliament as well during the course of this year. Chair, on the legislative program, inputs were also received into the adjudication of disputes in the Housing Consumer Protection Bill. The bill has been submitted to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor for a preliminary legal opinion and certification. And then amendments are also being prepared on the Home Loan and Mortgage Disclosure Amendment Bill. And then the CSOS and the sectional titles schemes regulations have been adopted by National Assembly, and those will be tabled before the National Council of Provinces during the course of August. On the consolidation of the development DFIs, and it flows from the fourth quarter, Chair, what we can indicate is that the policy and legal and regulatory processes for the establishment of the Human Settlements Development Bank were finalized, and this includes the final draft policy and appointment process for the legal drafters, as indicated in the fourth quarter. A proposal on the appointment of the interim governance structure, as indicated, is now under consideration by Minister, and there were certain revisions that were done on the basis of comments from the various boards, and we're hoping that will be concluded by the end of September. We have confirmed with National Treasury during the first quarter, that the amendments to the tax legislation to enable the conclusion of the buy and sell agreements to effect the consolidation of the draft and nurture. So I know this might sound like it's a repetition, but the required amendments and the consultation process and process in relation to getting the tax amendments was quite protracted after Minister of Finance had announced this in the 2016-2017 budget. On the preliminary housing opportunities, and we say the preliminary because these are some of the stuff that is still in the process of being finalized in terms of its correctness. During this quarter, there were 75 feasibilities planned, and 52 were in fact conducted in the various municipalities, and they include Breda Valley, Amatole, Naizna, Mbombela, and Alfred Nzo. Then we had planned 100 informal settlement upgrading plans for the quarter, and 26 informal settlement upgrading plans were in fact developed, including Msunduzi and Tembisi Lihani municipalities. There were 9,279 households upgraded and provided with services. And then for the quarter until the end of 30 June, there were 16,906 subsidized housing opportunities provided. Chair, that's where the figures are, particularly in relation to the quarter. So you'll see that the targets for services were 16,000, and that was averaged across the averaged across the quarters. So we got to 16,000, however, delivered was only 8. The target for houses completed, to be completed, was 28, and the houses completed was 16. And then the total delivery for that period was 24,709. This is in relation to, we've updated this on a various, on a day-by-day basis, given the fact that provinces do in fact provide this information on a daily basis. So this is the latest. That's what the target is. I think Chair just has indicated in the previous quarter. For last year, we had set our target at 162,000. For this year, we are aiming at 180, so 180,279 at the bottom there, you'll see. So that's what we want to target for this financial year, is 180. Of the 180, we've managed to deliver with the provinces 24,719. Chair, then in relation to the MOUs that have been drafted for the establishment, the MOUs have been drafted for the establishment of partnerships with the following mining companies: Wesizwe Bakubang, Platinum Mining, and then Anglo American, and that's for particularly in relation to Thaba Zimbi. The strategic partnerships that were formalized and conducted during this quarter was the Association of Universities established, with academic institutions participating in the professionalization of a human settlements qualification. The intention here, Chair, is members, for us to have a professional human settlements qualification, because this is one of the things that is currently creating one of those issues around institutional memory, capacity, as well as technical knowledge and expertise drain. And we're not able to retain, and it's been lost to other sectors of technical expertise. We've also concluded or completed the draft for approval and signature of the MOU between the department and Mangosuthu University of Technology to establish a chairpersonship for research, because this is one of the issues that we are having to deal with. Then we've also completed with the University of Fort Hare a partnership for sustainable human settlements, with specific focus on social facilitation, community engagement, research, and capacity development. Then in continuation, Chair, this slide, and slide 13, just gives an indication of what the continuation in terms of the numbers of the youth, and for the period, it's 1,750 and we give you the provinces where that has occurred. And then during this quarter as well, there was an intake of 900 real estate learnerships through the EAAB, and then the funding of the students of, through the departmental scholarship program. Chair, we also give the sector building capacity initiatives. Of importance, Chair, is the first two bullet points. The minimum 30% allocation quota of housing projects to women has been implemented within the existing government procurement policy framework. Now, in essence, what the directive that has been given by Minister is that of all grant funding in provinces, including some operational, women will be allocated 30%. And that's not only about contracting, but that's across the delivery chain. And we are putting in place a policy procurement framework to ensure that we are able to monitor and report on that. So it's not only about creating a contractor class for women, but professionals, material supply, because that's where a substantial amount of money gets spent, and sometimes we lose sight of that effect. Then we just give an further indication, and Chair, we as requested, we've created a hyperlink which gives you the capacity building initiatives of province, so you can locate it and for that. Then we just also, Chair, we've also given an indication of the administrative and communication issues. Of importance here is the departmental SMS disclosure requirement was submitted to DBSA, and I think the DDG for Corporate Services, we did improve, but I think we're still falling short around that, and the DG has taken the requisite steps to address that of those officials that have not complied. But I don't have the exact figure, but I think we'll get that for you, Chair. The preliminary overall performance of the department for this quarter is 48%. And most of the targets that have not been achieved relate to MTSF delivery targets that are cumulative. So information classified as partially achieved relate to targets where substantial amount of work has been done, and actual performance will be validated prior to submitting the actual performance information in September 2016. So, Chair, we've been conservative in relation to presenting that, and once the audit does come out of that, we will provide the committee with the final, which is expected to be a little more than 48%. The targets, the delivery targets, not achieved, and this we will talk to, Chair, because we have indicated that on the first three, we have got detailed presentations in which the portfolio can look at what are some of the challenges we have to face, particularly around provinces and municipalities. So the targets we did not achieve are the Title Deeds Restoration Program, the Informal Settlements Upgrading Program, including the National Upgrading Support Program, and that's both in provinces and municipalities, and then also the affordable rental. Chair, that's the preliminary performance per program, and that relates to the 48% that was spoken about. Chair, I'll then hand over the expenditure for the first quarter to the CFO.
Chair, thank you very much. Chair, I think it would be best if I chalk the 3.5 that we closed the year off as the allocation against the 3.6 that we have in this financial year. And if you look at the two figures, and at the beginning of the year when we presented to the CPLS committee as well as the portfolio committee, we did indicate that our budget did not increase at all. So you would realize that the difference between the 30.6 and the 30.5 that we reported earlier on differed by 147 million at the most. So I'm also indicating up front that we did highlight to the committee before that we do have funding shortages in this financial year. However, we also indicated that we will not compromise any quality of work based on the cuts that have been instilled or given by National Treasury, and that is cutting across given the economy that we are faced with. So I will be reporting on the allocation for this financial year, the 30.6 billion. So if you look at that allocation, it also constitutes the grants that goes to Metro, as well as our grants that are transferred to our provinces only. And I did indicate that the capacity grant is year end for 31st March. So we will not be seeing any of the capacity grant throughout this year and the other years subsequent. But I must indicate that from the element of the continuity of the grant, in terms of our approved grant framework for this financial year, we did allocate a certain percentage for Metros to use to continue with the program of capacitating the Metro towards the project management as well as towards support to the upgrading of informal settlements and the human settlements department. The expenditure to this effect, Chairperson, is sitting at 5.3 billion. It constitutes a grant that has been transferred, we will see it as we move, as well as the transfers to the entities. But of significance is the amount that we show as expenditure for this financial year, for this quarter rather, to the tune of 17%. We would have wanted the situation to be at 25%, given the quantitative or the arithmetic calculation of our projection. We are far below the figure. It would have been best if we reported 20% in contrast to 17%. But there's a number of elements that constituted or rather contributed to the underspending of that. And I think of significant, it varies because if one looks at the entire expenditure of the department, you would notice that we have overspending in some of the programs. But I must indicate that the delays that had cost us not to do some of the procurement work was the fact that we had an IT committee that ended in January this financial year. And it took us a bit of time to constitute the ITC committee, which was subsequently appointed during the course of April and May. It was the end of April, but in the first weeks of May, and some of the work had then to start to procure some of the operational costs relative to the goods and services. Chairperson, if we look at your administration in perhaps maybe never the next slide, we'll tell you to say from the operational point of view, and if I look at the expenditure of the department in general, within the framework of the 19%, we had different over and underspending. And as I indicated, some of the overspending to that effect, although it does not give us the 20% suggestion, related to the number of media-related activities that we had during the financial year, somehow our projections were less than what we anticipated, and somewhere our payment of personal costs was higher than what we anticipated in different programs. The major one being the fact that we were hoping that there would be some increment of the SMS members, given the number in the department, and unfortunately that only took a toll of its adjustment just after the end of the quarter, which was July this financial year. And we had somewhere in terms of our property management, the issue of the leasing of accommodation, which resulted in us over-projecting share, and that will be under administration as well. The escalation was higher than what we projected. But we do not justify the fact that we underspent by 17%. We would have been at 25%, as I indicated. During the course of this year, we also had to pay the audit fees that we undertook an audit to that effect. Chair, if you look at the expenditure, although it says 17%, it constitutes the transfers to the institutions as well as the transfers to the metro. The next slide, Nebel, will talk to the transfer payment, whereby one would be able to see that our 18.2 of the metro, 5.1 billion of it, reflects as an expenditure because we had transferred the whole amount to the metros during the period ended 30 June. When you look at that amount, it would suggest to say 28% of the entire 18.2 was spent. But the picture will reflect a different scenario when we go to the provinces in different numbers, which will be the next slide. But when you look at the urban settlement development grant, I indicated at that time, or during the first the last quarter presentation, that provinces still had 3 months to spend their USDG. So we would not have transferred part of the 10.8 billion that is allocated in the 16-17, because metros were still finalizing the last quarter of the financial year of the 11 billion that we indicated on. So we couldn't transfer any urban settlement development grant to metro. Hence the expenditure is sitting at 0%. We transferred 86 million of the operational costs of the social housing regulator authority. It being the start of a new year, that money was really needed to kickstart the operations of the SHRA. We are indicating that the pipeline project is getting its toll and it's being finalized. So the issue of the 34, the 624, as well as the 6 million for the regulations as well to the social regulator authorities will be transferred in this financial year. And as the study indicated along the line, how far the pipeline project is, it is being undertaken and it will be approved not long. So we will be able to transfer those costs in contrast to what transpired in the financial year. We've already given CISCOS a 16 million of the allocation of 23 million to the tune of 68 million. We still have to transfer the 100 million ACH funds and the NAS program fund that is mainly assisting the program of upgrading of informal settlement together with the program of our PMU in the department. So it is still the early beginning of the financial year. We're not rushing to transfer the funds as we'll be resting, or rather rusting, in the books of the entities without them being planned or properly administered within this period. So one would just as well indicate that during the next quarter, which is really your quarter two, the trend of an increase will show because of those transfers that will be affected into the accounts of the entities as well as the provinces. The next slide, as I indicated, it shows the picture of the 5 billion that we had transferred. That will be the next slide, Nebel. To our provinces, which again constitutes the money that provides for the units as well as the sites that we expect from provinces. So I think along the line, and the emphasis once again is such that of this 18.2 billion, we do have earmarked funds that we set aside for them to specifically look at the programs that we want to see them making a difference, just like your disaster as well as your mining time. And I do not want to talk much of the ratification because we did agree to say we want to slow the progress down because it does not yield any benefits, or rather the results. The 5.1 that has been transferred to metros of the 18.2 resulted in a finish of 4.3 billion by provinces rather. And I think, Chair, this is the different financial year, and I think we must indicate that one of the challenges that we had, which we had to close some of the books with, was the issue of the accrual. And the accruals from the funds that the invoices that could not be paid, particularly your Free State. So when you look at the Free State, our projections were based on the fact that there was work done that was done during February, March, and there was little funding that could have been made payments to those invoices. So we looked at the scenarios of the metros and the payments to the contractors against the job that needed to be done in terms of their business plan for 16-17. So that 4.3 for Free State in particular, as well as the part of the Limpopo, contributed to the payment to of the accruals that could not be paid or payments that could not be paid during March and had to overlap to the April. Otherwise, in most of the provinces, the work that has been undertaken during April until June constituted new units and new sites to that amount or within the 4.3. So the amount that the provinces were still sitting with during June, before we could even transfer the July one, was 804 that could not be spent at that point in time. We were not so worried much, Chair, about this amount because we knew that it was committed, but it could not be paid because there was work in progress and they would not have paid the entire amount. So if you look at this trend, at the pace that we would be getting, we were within the reach of 24% with against your 25%. So if you look at the projection that we had was higher than the 25%. Excuse me. That we had projected, but I think the 24% it is still within reach. And when we look at the second quarter, as we shall be presenting along the lines, which has some quarters to come, the scenario will look differently from what we had in terms of our June. The milestones that again are not yielding any new opportunities as they continue from some of the previous financial work that has started, it suggests to say that your EDBS still remains an allocation amount of 81 in total, again is 1.7. We look at the trend. We had 1.788 in the previous financial year. Now it has gone down by almost 5 million, which does not make any big difference if you look at it from a rent point of view. But the trend is that for these milestones that are not yielding any new opportunities, we have a principle of budgeting a 1.7 against this. The ratification is lower, and as I indicated, our focus is not on ratification, but I think the three provinces that have indicated they are concluding the work that has started in the previous financial year. The disaster relief fund stands out to be an earmarked fund for certain provinces as indicated by the disaster management unit of that fund as given. The upgrading on from assessments, again, Chair, we emphasize it as an earmarked fund of the program that is running. Continuing from the areas that have been given in the previous financial year and the work that the provinces had started, you would still have your free state spending money on your matching to the amount of 103, which suggests to say 602 units have been built within the matching area in this three quarter. We don't have anything yet reported from Gauteng. The follow-up is being made, although we indicated to our province sometime last week when we had our reviews that the performance of Gauteng is not to the desired effect. And I think when we were looking at the issue of the mining camp, the report is still being followed through the office of the COO for us to get the understanding of why this program is not moving and as it could not move even the previous financial year. There's much progress in Limpopo, and as you can see, at least there's a difference between the previous, because Thabazimbi did not have much. You would have had your greater tubers to face up home again in this financial year, giving us some units over and above what was received in the financial year, and spending to that effect as well against the number of units. We are moving in terms of Northwest. There's much progress in terms of your mining towns, which are taking a greater toll. And there is at least an improvement again in Northern Cape, although not much in Khasokonyane. But obviously our concern is about where they had budgeted for, and there's no movement in terms of the allocation, and there's no movement in terms of the unit. There's a bit of a progress in Mpumalanga because there were 1,005 that were reported to have been serviced within the area of Malahleni and to the tune of 89 million. There is an expenditure in as far as this trade is concerned, but there was no significant units that could be tangibly counted against the 745, 528 respectively, whereby 52 million was expended on because of the fact that the report did not indicate as such. So a follow-up was also made to that effect. But I think we were looking much at our Northwest because there was much big progress that was reported by the province to the total of 1.3 targets that we were looking at, and I think their target is very big if we compare it to others, although it's more segmented in terms of your areas of division. The CRISP, which I did indicate, it's giving it a small start. We do get a bit of units within this program, although we are indicating that it does not yield the desired result, and we are yet to give some figures in terms of your Limpopo, because Limpopo is actually using a different mechanism in contrast to the other programs who are using the NHFC as their DFI. Now, again, we pose our concern towards the housing of the number of units that we are not receiving in terms of development. And I think when we look at our housing, it's one of the provinces that is also big, but it does not actually provide us with the tangible results that we want to see out of the budget of a billion or so, 5 billion rather, if we compare it with other provinces. I did indicate that there's just three, that's the next slide, there's three provinces that are finalizing the ratification program, Eastern Cape, KZN, and Western Cape, although the units were not granted. We looked at Eastern Cape in the previous financial year. They did indicate that they just want to continue finishing these projects, and that they will not finish, they will not take a year or so. I think by the third quarter, we will be looking at the amount being finalized, although the cost of units is also still high. The KZN obviously uses a small rate of the cost in contrast to the other provinces, but we do get desired results and a number of units that are being rectified in KZN. We cannot report anything as far as Western Cape is concerned because we do not have any figures, or rather we did not have figures at the time of this report. Your off-cap again, Chairperson, if you look at the trend, although we have an allocation of 910, provinces again under budgeting on this because of the fact that there's development, there's project management units that have been established, so those funds are not much needed in terms of the project management because the provinces are utilizing the internal skills and the internal capacity to project manage, while they do use the off-cap in areas where it's mostly needed in contrast to hiring project management with that fund. The expenditure to that is 167 in terms of the operational budget. The disaster on the Eastern Cape had indicated some units to the value of 19.3 million, with sites and units having been serviced and developed. That's the only province that indicated the disaster in terms of that, but those are the four provinces where the 195 was earmarked for that. The Thorny issue brings us back to the USDG. Okay, this is the closing balance of the grant that was allocated in the 15-16 financial year for Metros to close the expenditure at 95%. That 93 has since moved, Chair, simply because the Buffalo City has given us a report that stipulates 100% in expenditure, as well as the City of Cape Town that has moved from 85% to 90% at the time of the Metro closing the books. So when I looked at the expenditure yesterday and the figures that we just received, suggest to say that the Metros have closed the USDG allocation by 95%. So the 4% is against the Nelson Mandela, is against the Mangaung, is against Ekurhuleni, is also against the city of Johannesburg, and I think it's 145 million that has not been spent by the city of Cape Town. Earlier on, Chair, I did indicate that last year we had two major metros that had major or rather big underspending. And again, we still have the same metros that could not spend, which is the city of Cape Town, as well as your Ekurhuleni. Although the amount of Ekurhuleni this year has dropped by 100 million at the most, but 350 is still a bigger amount for the metro to not could have spent. Your city of Cape Town did not spend the 145. The figure has changed, Chair, from 2 to 7, as I indicated. It rose to 95%. 90% rather. But now we have since added your Nelson Mandela and your Mangaung not having spent in this financial year. And I think as we conclude, when metros conclude differently, because they close their books at a different time, because they are using a different actual accounting system, that we would receive a final report from all the metros during the course of this week. So the figure may even move from 95% to 96%, but we don't expect a bigger change in this entire. So our grant USDG, with its performance, with the fact that we did not have any more information from the metros, because when they close the books, they would want to give you a consolidated report that will tell you to say which department. And I think it would be in the interest of the committee to know whether what I spoke of earlier in terms of the five, if not the six departments that constitute the human settlement integration. Unfortunately, the information we don't have, because it's a bit skewed, it was not concluded at the time of this report. So, but the 95% is the figure from the expenditure point of view that one would report at this stage. But the performance to date in terms of department, I think Chairperson, we can commit to say that information will form part of the reports that we will forward through the Director General to the Chair, just so members see what we speak and what is on the paper talks to each other. The capacity grant, again, it being the closed grant, it failed to achieve the 100%. It is currently sitting at 52%, so to say, because the figures that again I had in yesterday's report suggested to say 50, but the report represents 41%. And I think the commitment that I make with this committee, when I give the report through the Director General, will give different figures, and that will constitute the report of the metros as at 30 June 2016 closing, with the non-financial performance information that will follow to that effect. Can I conclude, Chair, with that information that you did? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. That concludes the presentation.
Thank you very much, CFO and CEO. Didri, any word from you?
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps a little comment on the performance of the Southern Settlements Development Board. We did everything administratively possible in March to move 300 million rand from Ekurhuleni to Johannesburg, because we felt that Johannesburg had a number of projects that would absorb that 300 million rand, and we didn't want an under expenditure of 300 million rand. We projected that there will be 300 million rand under expenditure. We met with the city manager, and that was confirmed. We did the same with the city of Cape Town. We met with the city manager and the team, and we made a projection that city of Cape Town had an expenditure of 150 million rand, and they confirmed as well that they were underspent by almost 150 million rand. In the case of the city of Cape Town, we made a recommendation that the 150 million rands can be absorbed easily by the fund, because there are projects in the province, in the Western Cape province, that can absorb that budget. And the MEC gave us a list of projects that could absorb that budget. Unfortunately, Chair, the National Treasury was not in a position to accept that decision, because we, from our side, we went to MIMEC, and MIMEC endorsed the decision. All the embassies and all the MMCs who sit in MIMEC, they endorsed the decision for the practical important. But Treasury didn't have enough time to run the process. They wrote back to us on the 17th of March, ask us to disperse the money to the merchants, effectively meaning that they must accept that there will be a rollover, because they didn't have enough time to run all the dollar processes for that administrative decision to be implemented. It's always in the Division of Revenue Act that where you feel or where we are of the view that the metros or the provinces are not going to spend the money, you can move the funds from quarter from provinces to high performing provinces. Or you can move the funds from quarter from metros to high performing metros. We always do this exercise, but we have agreed with Treasury because of the, we had some heated discussion in April and May, and we finally agreed that if there's going to be any decision to be made on the reallocation of the funds, those decisions must be made in the second quarter or in the third quarter. That's what Treasury has finally agreed to do with this. Because if you do it in the third quarter, then it allows us and it allows Treasury to do the administrative process. But we felt that our administrative process, all those legal processes that are segregated in the border, are still in the state law, and we will run that process in the department. But the law also allows Treasury to do exactly the same thing that they've done, and we felt that they didn't have enough time to do exactly the same thing. So, Chair, I'm explaining it. It's a simple, straightforward process. Now we're sitting with under expenditure, and we will apply for a rollover, and there are no guarantees that we'll get rollover in the future. It's under pressure. But we will do everything possible to the money in the sector. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DJ. As I'm going to allow honorable members to comment and make their observations on these two presentations, both the fourth and the first quarter, I just want to say, probably at the end of it all, we would need to agree that the provinces must come to the portfolio committee so that we can have an understanding from them what challenges they are facing. I'm just saying it up front so that as we probably by the next meeting, if it's humanly possible, but we will communicate to the members. But I think it will help us if we can have provinces coming in front of the portfolio committee. With that, I'm allowing the members to say comments. I'll point hands. I'm allowing you, Honorable Stolle, to actually talk to us for the first time this time around. I've missed your voice. Honorable Chauke will follow you, followed by Honorable Ghana, followed by Honorable Menezi, followed by Honorable Ada, followed by Honorable Bam, followed by Honorable Makause, and followed by Honorable Nangatamash. You can comment on any of the two, because in any case, the trend is the same, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the department for the report, because it is an eye-opener to us. But my first one is going to DG, because his last comment, Chair. If I do remember at our last meeting, they promised that 3.6 million from Eburuveni is going to be utilized within the Eburuveni. So now I'm concerned if there's nothing that happened, because according to their report, they're supposed to allocate it to some project at Eburuveni. And the one for City of Cape Town, things was promised that they are going to utilize within the project that are in the City of Cape Town. And just on my first one is that one,
is on page 3. Slide number 5, the first one. The first quarter four. When they are talking about the 14,266 credit issued to new home owners in the subsidy, what I want to get to, Chairperson, how many houses have been delivered? Are they saying they have delivered these 4,266, or there were some more houses? And then the other one, Chairperson, is on slide number, I think it's page 5, slide number 10. Chairperson, I don't understand what's happening. I want to tell you the thing. There's nothing at Limpopo. There's nothing in KZN and Western Cape. Are they saying that there's no misrepresentation in this province? I'm not going to do my president, but I'm trying to move it. Another Chairperson is that on page 6. Under 60% under river tradition of mining towns. 98 informal settlements in the northwest, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and then 89 informal settlements. If they can give some details per province, because if it's like that, doesn't show how many. And the other one, Chairperson, is that one not page 11. Slide number 21. Here they are talking about the municipality human settlement capacity grant. They say 100%. But according to the report, they say selected municipalities. If they can give us the details, because the details of those municipalities. And the last one, Chairperson, is on page 18. On page 18, Chair, on capacity, slide number 35, capacity grant. Chair, I'm not convinced if this shows that they were underspent, as it shows here. What seem to the department have to help those municipalities to have those poor performance by the municipalities? Do they have any system that they are going to actually share with us, that they are going to help them to have the capacity? Because you know that all municipalities don't have capacity, but we have a lot of money supposed to be used for this kind of station.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, for this opportunity. And I think maybe just to start with on the military reference point that we made by the colleague there, I think it's got to do with the community. It's not meant to individual space. I care or don't care about the reference. It's a specific program meant to address a particular challenge. And I think we should approach it in that manner. Meant, in fact, to make a difference to those who have made so much contribution to the liberation that we have today in the temple. Now, the point that I want to come in here, the general service delivery of government, the last department, and my concern of yours is the provision of human settlement of, in particular, the mining. Now, I hear now that the government has some kind of a relationship established with mining companies. And I think all of us, Chair, will be aware that the now recently Amnesty International report, which I've read in detail, puts a different picture of the commitment of this mining company. Now, what I want to understand is, what are the fundamental issues within the government, between mining houses and government and other stakeholders? With an example of Marikana, if you were to, at the same time, you applaud the department, but at the same time again say that one of the problems that we have put ourselves in, we sort of take a responsibility, not to take the responsibility of the mining houses totally. Their role is just to provide land living there. And we have to come in and then deal with infrastructure, beneficiation problems and all of that. I think it's going to look at that issue. Which was quite an example of the challenge that we face. So I want to hear what are the commitments from mining companies. What are the commitments? And at what level? Is the Department of DMR mineral involved in the process? Because the mining companies made a commitment in front of the Department of the Minerals to say, this is what we're going to do to contribute to the communities where we are mining. Now, eradication of informal settlements that we have a program on lies exactly in the mining areas. And mining companies are not taking those. I think it was important that you share with us that this is the impact. Tell us that those agreements are actually before the committee, so that we can then use that as a monitor to monitor implementation and commitment of mining houses. Because I think it's quite too long, Chair, that we have left these mining houses without really pushing them to deliver on the promises. They are milking our resources. Very soon, Lomé, the report I know, is that in the next 6 years, Lomé will be done in Marikana. The next year, London will be done in Mauritania, and that's a conceptual report that I have. What does it mean on the development of those communities where they currently extracting tons and tons of platinum and iron ore, and other minerals in the area? So I'm saying that let us get that strategic plan that informs this relationship. The second problem, I think, Chair, that I just want to get clarity on will be around the issues of capacity. The department, in fact, has gone out in mobilizing young people to a number of programs, artisan skills and aids and all of that, all those different skills. But we don't have a breakdown per province, so that we can then be able to measure this capacity that has been trained and the deployment of that capacity to different programs. One of the biggest problems that I think I'm currently identifying here is that is capacity to deliver service. Generally, with your municipalities, I think this is what we are picking up. The strategic plan of the department to move into areas where there's no performance. I'm happy that the Northwest is one of the provinces that are consuming, but it's one of the provinces that have major challenges. If you look at issues of human settlement and all that. That can come up very clear again. I'm not picking it up now, in fact, as to, you know, this lack of capacity, but we are allocating, we are not able to spend money again. We deal with rollovers. Somehow we're not balancing something. So I think those are the issues that I'll definitely have to share that. The relationship with CETA, I think, in the ages of the world, raises that thing of ITC. Maybe you should share with us what is the current arrangement now, because that becomes quite very cheap, really opening up that kind of a relationship with service, general relationship to our economies. General, I'll just hope that you know, so they will come back and
thank you very much, Honorable Chauke, Honorable Kana.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings, colleagues, officials. Thanks for the presentation. Chair, I want to start on the point that you made, that provinces need to come. I agree, but I think the first thing, the important thing that we need to do, because many a time we try to have 3-4 provinces come and we don't adequately interrogate what they are doing. So I think the province that needs to come to the committee is housing. We need to have the full 3 hours with housing. No other province, no other report should serve on that day. But housing needs to come and tell us what's going on there. Because if I look at the numbers, and I'm glad that the Honorable Shauke is raising some of these matters. You look at the money allocated to housing for informal settlement upgrades in mining towns. 255 million for the whole year, 12 months, 365 days, housing spent zero. There's no spending. And I mean we can go to Redford Dane, we can go to Carltonville, we can go to Western Area. I mean those who, of us who come from housing, you'll know the waterworks. No waterworks. Just on the entrance. Housing is saying no, we can't spend this money. We know there are informal settlements in all these mining towns. And so, Chair, I want to second your proposal that provinces need to come. And I want us to spend the whole day or the whole time for the meeting with housing. And I know usually people come and they come with fancy slides, and then they come, they know it's in progress. And it has been the case of housing. I think since the committee started, you look at what they have been able to spend. Housing has spent 99% of their budget. 99%. Delivery 62%. I mean the bulk or a significant chunk of the human settlement budget, HSDG, goes to housing. It receives the highest in terms of allocation. But then in terms of performance, it is the lowest. And I know the National Department comes and says, no, there are interventions there, we will intervene, and there are teams there. But we haven't been the reverse. For the last two financial years, housing hasn't really gone up. So it's something that we seriously need to look into, because it's a major concern, especially this one of mining towns, with all that happening. Then on the issue, one other issue that I noted here, and I think it goes into a bit to what Honorable Song has said around the mining towns and the commitment thereof. One issue that is still out there and it hasn't been resolved pertains to Marikana. The house, the houses there, the BNG houses, the last time I checked, which was three weeks ago, the houses have been occupied illegally. And 3 weeks ago, I'm not sure whether maybe my report might not have been right, the rental units were still not allocated, or people had not moved in. So I would like to find out from the department what's happening there in that particular site. Because when one listens at some of the comments that were being made on the commemoration event of the Marikana massacre, some of it related to the state of housing and how mine workers are out. On the USDG, I know that the CFO did mention that the numbers are not final figures, might get final figures. And so my initial question was going to be around that. And I think once we get that, I think we need to go dig a bit deeper, DG, in terms of what makes some municipalities spend and what makes others not to spend. Because if others are able to report, I mean, we're in August now, it's 2 months after the end of the financial year in municipalities. I understand that they are busy now with their auditing processes, but they should, by now, we should have an indication of the figures, I mean, that they believe they spent. But then if from national, we're still told that there might be a 3% change in the figures that are in front of us, it has me a bit worried. The last 2 points, Chair, is with the no three. Yeah, no, I forgot it. When we're talking about the consolidation of the GFIs, maybe it's because we haven't met in a long time. I don't don't recall getting into forming a bank, unless if my memory is failing me. But then from what I'm hearing now is that we are going towards the banking, I mean starting a bank, or forming a bank, which I would presume is a state bank. In the other presentation, that aspect of things was not mentioned, unless if my memory is failing me. And I just want to understand the change in approach, and I think it will, if it's a recent change in approach, it's only fair that we get an update on that particular score, because initially my understanding was that it's just going to be like the current development finance institutions, just housed under one EFI, but then now the talk is around the bank, and it's obviously has some implications. Or the department wants to start a bank. Then the last two, Chair, is the issue of the central housing demand database. How far are we with it? Because I know the minister has been talking about it, that from now on, the department or the allocation of housing will no longer be given to municipalities and contractors and all that. It will be at the national or provincial level. I'm not so sure. But how far are we in terms of doing that database? Because if we want to allocate, we must know who we are going to allocate to and whether that database will be open. And the last one, DJ, I want to check with the Nelson Mandela Bay intervention. How is that going, and is it proceeding? And I understand that there have been a lot of complaints, especially from contractors on the ground with regard to the intervention processes. I just want to know what's happening there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ghana, Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we should appreciate the presentation from the departmental officials. Thank you very much. Maybe joining what my fellow councillors have already noted.
I will come to Parliament now. Yes, that has been it. Municipalities. Maybe we must appreciate the movement by the department to really ensure that our people are skilled, in particular the youth in various fields. I think you have shown many areas. You are a department that also is trying to do something than otherwise, because that's what we need. We can only liberate this nation if it is skilled, if we have our skilled youth in various fields. I think that is quite important. I think I support Honorable Member Shauke in requesting you to spread the numbers per province so that we can follow up where we have these youth and where we may be lacking, and then increase the numbers. I think if you can move in that, it's a good that we must also be proud of it. I think the worrying areas indeed is when you plan, you agree these would be your targets, and then again yourselves you decide to fail the same targets. We all believe that you are quite empowered in planning, because all these talk to planning, whatever the challenges, but your planning
should be able to mitigate, should be, because you should also have the risk analysis of whatever changes you are introducing, so that you don't come here and become experts in justifying better non-delivery. So that's what now we are made to accommodate, understand, you are justifying it. In fact, you're using terms that may end up indeed making us agree with you that, oh, no, no, you are justified in order to deliver. Because you're using that term, you see. But the reality is that you didn't plan properly, because your planning must also analyze the risks so that you mitigate them. We don't come to a situation where we are forced to justify these things. They are not acceptable. When we agree with these programs, you know, this program delivery support, it impacts with many of our programs, your catalytic programs, and you must explain what is the impact there, including the critical post, you know, your admin, you didn't really do it the way, and yet it is the area, the program that will help you to deliver when you have all your forces, the critical post there. You must then indicate how this impact both the catalytic project and the critical post dealing. I think you must move. You see, there are all the programs that we talk about, you know, that you must relate the issue of title deeds. Title deeds are supposed to be there already because the houses are long been there. Now, giving them, printing them, teaching them to the people, how do we really plead with you for years? Can we really, for many years, we came here in 2014. We indicated there and there that it must go to the people, because we know there are so many housing projects that have been there. People have died without their diabetes. Can you really explain at what point are you going to stop justifying, finding reasons, better reasons, why these diabetes are not going to their people? It's really, it's one of the programs that we think really there's no justification. It's a bit of laziness. It's a bit of people not weeping. RPG, you are there to whip people for not doing things. Otherwise, we are duty bound to whip yourself. You see, it's sometimes not very happy that you still have townships, new township, beautiful township, that were finished many, many years, about 10 years ago, but they don't even have these multi-purpose community centers, and you have budget that is not spent. Shane, is that fair? We have beautiful townships that you guys have put up, but people are meeting under trees. You can't give them multi-purpose community center. One of it is in Mobile, north of Kakiso. Is there for 14 years. They have no hall, no nothing. It's beautiful, eh? With seats and everything. So, which part you don't spend, but the need is there. And the service providers are there in case you don't have staff that can do it. But the service providers are there. Why don't you give them the money? Why do you want to keep it? Now you want to justify? We must understand that there were some reasons. Please, your planning must save us all these things. I think on this issue of inviting provinces, whether all of them or start with housing, I think indeed when we call all of them, it squeezes us. But because there's many, many provinces and we have a duty over all of them, maybe we may also look in terms of others to add, for example, Limpopo, Northern Cape, So maybe we may leave it to the chair to look into maybe how many do we invite, but I think it makes sense, Honorable Ghana, that for us to really ask penetrating questions, we must have enough time with so not, but one province at a go, it may not assist us, because that would mean before we finish even next year, we'll still be inviting provinces. So I think the chair may assist us in that one. I think Honorable Sauge covered me on the mining towns, but we must say your role as a national department, when there's no new budget, let's go to page 12 in the, I think, the fourth quarter budget. In the top, in the upgrading of informal settlement, you really see that there's budget, but when it comes to the actual, there's really no movement in Gauteng. Where there's movement in Limpopo, it's too negligent. So where are these people that always drive in government cars all over the provinces, claiming to be from national? They are supervising the... What are they doing, Kasekase? Are they in a... Is it activity? Or are they serious supervising? Because they must be able to identify the bottlenecks and assist, work together with those provinces. So, why are these programs? Nothing. So I think it's not the same in the slide 26. Is the same. You have the budget is quite, let's take for Northwest Gauteng. What is allocated there is 118. But what is spent is 59. So if the people are good planners, that should be spent. I know there are a lot of needs in Gauteng. There are a lot of outstanding. In fact, there have since been having many foundations that were left by some contractors for many years in that municipality. So those things must be sorted. All those gaps that are there in this light, I just avoid to, in my debate, 237 budgeted, but the movement is 37 spent. So, and that is a heavily populated municipality. It really needs us to move before people force us by strike. I think indeed the department must really prove to us. The last one, Chair, is the Finance Link Individual Subsidy Program, FLIPS. I think we are still not doing good in this, and we are not supposed to be failing here, because you have so many middle class people. You have teachers everywhere, you have police, every province has police and teachers, every province. So we should be able to have these entities that are meant to go even to the rural areas. They must tell us, why do we still have them if they cannot spend this? This is a good program to help the middle class people, in fact, at the lower middle class. So then this slide here, slide 27, is really not helpful. It's not helpful. So I think if you can ensure that you justify head of department, ensure that people who are responsible for this area, they should be moving. People must know there should be this thing called consequences for non-deliver. Yes,
thank you, Honorable Members. I thought by this time when you come back from this break, you would know that it's flip, not flip. Honorable Macaus. Oh, okay. Is it, are you sure? Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. I won't repeat what my colleagues have said, but I would like to talk about the rollover. I've heard the CEO say, COO, CFO, Chairperson, don't help me, because you're confusing me even more.
Okay.
CFO, talking about youth fund, housing development finance, SIU, and the capacity grant. So I think, Chairperson, more than we can acknowledge the fact that all those things have been mentioned, but I think what needs to be clear as the portfolio is what is the strategy? What is it that the department is going to do to change that picture around? And also in terms of the capacity grant, we also would like to know as the portfolio as to which are those municipalities that are not spending that capacity grant, because they mustn't come here when we ask the provinces to come here and say they don't have capacity, whilst the department is giving them the budget to capacitate themselves. And then in terms of the rectification, just quickly, on slide 28 of the first report, I was just wondering, because in other provinces there's no target and yet there is a budget. So I was just interested as to how do they plan? Do they do this rectification ad hoc, or what is happening? And then my interest one is the catalytic project. I remember, Chairperson, there was going to be an announcement made by the minister, and then that announcement was postponed indefinitely. And I know there's Mr. Mulos, who's working with this catalytic project. I think we need Mr. Mulos must come here to come and put this portfolio into confidence as to what is happening with those catalytic projects. You know why I'm mentioning this, Chairperson, is that I don't want us as the portfolio to pick up issues after the announcement. I think we need to know everything, you know, interrogate that information. And he mustn't come here with bright slides and everything. He must just put it simple for us. Some of us, you know, we tend to take time to understand other things. So I think, Chairperson, if he can really push that one, he must come and give us the status of that, even before the minister can make the announcement. And then in terms of consolidation of RHLS, NHSC, and Nature Board, I'm just interested, perhaps there is a bigger picture around it, but what is the reason for this, and what is it that is the department that they want to achieve for consolidation, for consolidating all those boards? And then in terms of the upgrade of informal settlement, Chairperson, you know, it can be easy to say 51 informal settlements have been upgraded. But I think what is interesting to me, how many households. So much as you can say that 51 informal settlements have been upgraded, but in terms of the households, I think we need that report from the department. And under administration, I want to understand what you mean by human resource development plan. Is this something new or what? And also I was looking specifically under a vacancy report, why are we not getting a report around the vacancies? We don't have the issue around the vacancies? If you don't have the issue around the vacancies and the period of those vacancies, then that is not a problem. But I mean, I would like to see the report around the vacancies. And then in terms of sector capacity initiatives, whether the strategic partnerships, this is my last point. You know, much as I've looked here, I've got both reports here, but in terms of this financial, that is first quarter report, there is some kind of movement in terms of the memorandum of understanding or MOA, and also with Fort Hare University and Mangosuthu. And also you've mentioned also other institutions here that you are working with. I think it will be important for us to get a report for all those institutions that you have formed partnership, especially when it comes to sector capacity building initiatives. So if you can also get a report in like institutions like UNISA, I mean, we'd like to know as the portfolio as to what is the agreement, what is going to happen to those people that you have provided financial assistance to them. Thank you very much.
Honorable Fata, Honorable Pam.
Thank you, Chair. And may I thank the department for the presentation that you've been tabled in German this morning. A lot has been said, but I am sure we cannot be over-emphasizing when we talk of these mine towns, because the owners of the mines are profiteering, and the people they are working among are in abject poverty, and it looks like we are kid gloving the situation instead of really attacking it, you know, with all force. We need to do something about it and be serious, and be seen to be serious. It is quite hurting to see the poverty in those areas when you know that there are people who even baptize themselves with bonuses, huge bonuses at the end of each when they give out their dividends, while the people who make it happen for them are neglected. So I would appeal to everybody that we need to focus in this area seriously. Secondly, whilst I'm not conversant with the course content and the programs that are involved in the built industry in the universities or tertiary education, it is of concern to me that the output or the graduates from those places are still joining the long queues of in communities of job seekers. Is there no entrepreneurial skill training so that when they come out, they set themselves up? The same goes with the first quarter presentation, where we were talking of the intake of real estate learnership. Those graduates are trained, they come out, the market is chock-a-block, and the operators who happen to be white are struggling over, and they make it totally impossible for our young graduates to penetrate that market. So I suspect that something has got to be done to teach our graduates on entrepreneurial skills so that they know how to harness the market themselves. Otherwise, they are on an uphill, you know, against the usual operators who are white and are monopolistic in their operations. I would like to see that this is done, that whenever somebody is trained, there must be an arrangement that is made so that this person graduates and then goes to some form of activity that is going to afford them some form of income, not to just chew up and job seek like is the case right now. It's painful. And it is frustrating to the graduates themselves to do such. Also, about small operators, NESA is taking care of the experienced operators in the business. But I seem to see that there are a lot of small operators who would like to penetrate the industry, but they cannot even start because they don't have access to finance, unlike the big operators who have got access, or experienced operators who have got access or means to access NESA. Otherwise, the small operators seem to be left on their own to fend for themselves. I'm not sure that there is an arrangement that is made for these operators. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pam. Honorable Makause, as you take the floor, I take my leave, as I have said before.
Thank you, Chairperson. My input will be on slide 27, the first quarter report. The mine town, we have raised an issue in the past about the asbestosis roofing that are found in some of the mining towns, specifically in the Northern Cape, Katelopele local municipality, and Katokoyana. How far is the department and the province in terms of rectifying that? We seem not to be to be moving on that issue. And then also the double issuing of timeliness. During our constituency work, we come across many issues, many complaints regarding the double issuing of title deeds, specifically in Ikageng extension to the northwest, Katogonyana local municipality, Bankara Budulong, there's a community called Bankara Budulong, where you find people having one title deed. That creates a lot of tension among the community. We need to seriously and carefully look into that matter and rectify that, because sometimes people are evicted out of the sense that the municipality has seem to be allocated because of that. The other point is on slide 14, the fourth quarter report, the capacity building that you are giving as basic, which is a good thing. But what is your role as a department in making sure that young people and women who are capacitated are placed into a sort of better employment or employment itself? We cannot overemphasize on the issue of marijuana. It's a burning issue, and it's a touching issue, because what we are seeing in marijuana is actually inhumane. The commitments that mining houses are making seem not to be moving. What is government's role? I mean, we've got many people who sit on the board of those mining houses who are very much influential. What is the government's role in terms of making sure that the commitments that those mining houses are making are actually coming to the fore? Because we can't speak on this matter every now and then, and we don't see any movement regarding that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, honorable members. I think the last member that was supposed to contribute was the honorable Ranga Tabashe, after yourself, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Yes,
she's not in the PC. I think she's gone now.
Maybe when we wrap up, I'll come with my point. I'm not sure now whether to contribute or not, but maybe my friend. Thank you. No, my point was going to be especially that the first light on the quarter four, that deals with the total delivery of 2015-2016 tells us all. So that means that the expenditure is far lower than the approved projections. That's fair number one. That we did not meet our target, and in other slides it shows that we are really not meeting on the on program three, which is the delivery vehicle for the department. If you don't meet a target on program three, then that affects the output of the department, and that stops to the that output stops to the target and the delivery achievement of the budget. Then we are doomed if we do not spend at least 98% of that allocated budget on the housing delivery. If my memory serves me correct, is that we are only permissible, but I'm subject to be corrected by the National Treasury to roll over only 2% of the allocated budget. And if we are unable to reach 98% of delivery, then we can cry foul, because we will keep on saying pleading with the Treasury. But if they don't roll over those funds, we can't blame them, because we want that at least is acceptable, although it's not something that we must say you should only spend 98%. At least if you spend and you are remaining with 2%, at least is understandable. So that's the bottom line to me. And USDG, we cannot overemphasize that the metros really, if they don't spend, that's USDG. What are they doing really? Because the USDG talks to their core function. In fact, the housing delivery is not their core function. It's the National Department's core function. Their delivery is on the infrastructure of those housing delivery. If they don't spend money on the infrastructure utilizing USDG grant, and that USDG grant talks to what Honorable Memezi was saying, that there are other beautiful townships that we have established, but they don't have facilities. And why the question is why the USDG over and over again are failing. But I would like us to really separate between the older projects where we did not have that kind of enough funds to, there was a meet, but some municipalities did not utilize that meet to put amenities, especially amenities in those townships. And I don't think the blame should go to the National Department of Human Settlements. But for the other part of some few years, with the National Department really should take responsibility for that. But the metros as well must at some stage find a way of bringing metros to come and account. That brings me to that. If we call provinces, in fact, I support the proposal by the chairperson, Honorable Mafu, that we invite provinces to come in account and report for themselves. But is that we start with the three provinces that are clearly that they haven't really met the target. The Gauteng, the Limpopo that doesn't plan for sites, service site development, and that results for them being performance about being very low at sitting at 23.3% of service sites have been developed, and they have achieved over 100%. I think it's about 110% that have achieved at least on the housing delivery. But on those sites, they really have been toying for the past few financial years. And I recall that last time they were saying HDA is not giving them information. I really don't believe that. That for the whole 12 months, there'll be a lack of communication when you are supposed to work together, not to work in silos. So that's not a really an acceptable excuse. And although they are not as a province, then there is no metro in Limpopo, but on that kind of a delivery of service sites. I'm saying why we should start with them. And then Northern Cape, they have a high number of houses delivered. They've done okay, but also they've been doing on low service sites, because even on the previous financial year, we've been discussing about Northern Cape not producing service sites, and we need those three provinces to come first, and then the rest will follow. But because we would like to have them after having their metros finalized and close their books, because it won't help us to bring the provinces here, and then they will also report on their metros, whereas the metros haven't closed their books. But maybe afterwards, I propose that we invite metros after the provinces, specifically on the USDG grant spending, because those monies, they go direct, they don't via provinces, isn't it? They go direct to metro. So for that specific program, the metros must come, especially those that are not doing well. And the other provinces, it's worrying not to have targets. But when other provinces are able to report on their targets, why other provinces keep on not reporting on their targets? That is not acceptable. I think I've spoken on rollovers that are permitted. The last low spending on consultancy fees as well is a worrying factor. And then we can never ever emphasize the flip spending. Really, since we started this fifth parliament, on our first budget debate, we spoke about the importance of increasing the rental stock, our rental stock, to cover our professionals, middle income professionals, our public sector employees, our small business people who still establish themselves but who want to own properties as well, can tap into that market, our market that is also a private sector, the banking sector. And that's what we partner with the banking sector, but the market is not there. It's not there really. A national department fleets must really now come with concrete mechanism that will talk to the improvement. We don't need the usual explanations when we want really now a plan that talks to the problem. How are they going to deal with the problem that prevent them from delivering? Having said that, DG, the port is on you to with the team to respond. You will identify who will start first, and then I suppose who's going to be closing. Thank you. I don't know whether the members would like a fresh break, but it's 12 o'clock now. Continue. Okay, all right. Continue.
Thank you, Chair. I'll start with my colleagues, and deal with the rest of the questions. Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the 300 million rand of Eboruleni. We have two options in Eboruleni. The first option was to move the funds to Joburg. The second option, which was put forward by the MEC, was to keep the funds in Eboruleni. We ended up keeping the funds in Eboruleni, so we haven't moved the funds. And the arrangement was that the 300 million rands, which we projected as under expenditure, will be used for a number of programs, including hostel development. They've signed an agreement with a protocol with HDE to assist them in packaging some of the programs. I have no doubt in my mind that money now is committed. We had a number of meetings with the city manager, and it's probably committed. And if it's committed, contractually committed, and it's not an aspirational commitment, Treasury will be able to approve thereof. Then there was a question about, I will leave the title deeds question to the COO. He's been managing this program for us. We had a workshop last week in Devon where we summoned all the HODs to account on the title deeds, because we've now ring-fenced the money. In the past, the title deeds program was not being prioritized by the provinces because this is an old problem which deals with beneficiary administration. In some cases, even when you have a title deed, you find that there is no beneficiary to accept that title deed, because you're talking about third, fourth generation of the occupiers of that house. So you will have a number of title deeds sitting in a municipal office because of this administration part. In some instances, there's retrofitting that needs to be done of plans, because when we started building many years ago, there were no subdivisions. We had to keep going with the plans, the servicing of the sites, and the construction of the units. And then later we have to do the subdivisions, because you can't issue a title deed if you haven't done all of those subdivisions. Perhaps at some point we will have to come here and focus on how we are managing this title deeds program. What strategy do we have in place to deal with the title deeds program by province? We can present it to you, the budget by province, because it is ring-fenced. We can present to you the plans by province on how to deal with the problem, because we do have a target which has to be achieved by 2019. And when we go to cabinet all the time, this is one problem that is not moving as fast as we can. But last week we had a two-day workshop where we focused on how we deal with the problem. Because we threaten the HODs, I must say, Chair. we account here and we expect to account and not to give excuses, and to give full responsibility on how we're performing on this issue. We have not been nice with the HODs in most of those meetings, and we've been very tough with them. And we threaten them that if they don't use the money for what it's intended, we will move it to those provinces where the title deeds program is performing very well. Ironically, one of the provinces where the title deeds is doing very well is Northern Cape. They're doing far much better than any other province, then followed by the Western Cape. There are provinces that have managed to turn the graph around, but the overall picture is still not where we would want it to be. In Marikana, Chair, there was a question about Marikana. You will recall that we delivered the DLG units, the RTP units, about 250 of them. Then we have also in excess of 200 rental stock units. I think the starting point is that government should not be delivering housing for the mine workers. It is not a responsibility of government to provide housing for mine workers. It is in the social labor plans of the mining companies themselves that when they sign, they get all of the mining rights, they sign the social labor plans to deliver houses for the mine workers. But we started with Lonmin because we realized that there is a problem. Lonmin at the time had about 24,000 mine workers, and more than 15,000 of the mine workers stay in informal settlements, and the conditions are not very good there. But all of them are receiving what is called the living out allowance, which is intended to help them to go find a place to stay, and they end up building shacks, which is why in most of the mining towns you will notice that there is a mushrooming of informal settlements, because mine workers get given the living out allowance to go find a place to stay. So government, that's why we start with packaging of the upgrading plans in the mining towns. We have a presence in all the mining towns. Our professionals are there in terms of understanding what needs to be done in those informal settlements. We can tell you which informal settlements are upgradable, where they are, which informal settlements need to be relocated because you can't do the upgrading, because we do an assessment of each and every informal settlement. We count the dwellings, we do geotech assessments, we do beneficiary screening up front. It's a very time-consuming exercise. But once all of those things are done, those plans have to be presented to the council, and the council must adopt them so that once they are adopted, they can become a project, a capital project for upgrading. So the first part is to do the planning, which is your counting, your dwellings and everything. The second part is to present it to the council, for the council to adopt the plans, then they can be registered as a project, as a capital project. But what we picked up in the mining towns is that there are good plans and good initiatives. They're good companies, and we're willing to come and present those initiatives to you with the mining companies themselves. For instance, as we're speaking right now, Anglo Platt and Tabazimbi, in Tabazimbi, they're meeting with the team, with my team, HDH in Hatfield, to present their own plan. We've seen a brilliant plan from Royal Bafokeng, where they have raised funds themselves in excess of 2.8 billion rands to provide accommodation for the mine, for their mine workers, more than 3,000 mine workers. And all what they're asking from government is a partnership so that we can manage the approvals, we can manage the EIAs, and also if there is a need for contribution, the government contribution will not be significant. We can assist them in terms of the infrastructure part, but the rest comes from them. And government will be more than willing, for instance, on our side, be more than willing to come up with the CISP top up for the mining town. So there are brilliant plans, and we can look at them. In fact, the Royal Bafokeng one, we felt that it can be used as a model on how government can partner with the mining companies, because the responsibility lies with mining companies themselves. And if Royal Bafokeng can raise 2.8 billion rands and partner with PIC to provide housing for the mine workers, other mining companies can do the same as well. And we feel that that's the best model that can be used, instead of taking over as government and provide housing for mine workers, which is not a responsibility of government. And then there was a question about the DFI consolidation. The DFI consolidation, we're using the word bank not to mean your traditional banks. For instance, we have DBSA, Development Bank of Southern Africa. It is not a bank, it is a DFI. It is a development finance institution. What separates a development finance institution from a bank is that development finance institutions don't take deposits like your ABSA, Standard Bank, your Net Bank. So DFIs don't take deposits. DFIs focus on infrastructure investment, long-term investments. They provide bridge funding in some cases. So our model will be along the lines of your TBS. In fact, when you mention the word bank, you must always make it a point that you mention the word development as well, because it's called the development bank, which is another name for a development institution, if you like. It's not a bank in the traditional sense of the word. And the treasury officials are very much aware of that. So we will call it Human Settlements Development Bank. You can call it Human Settlements Development Finance Institution. It means the same thing. There was a question about Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. What's going to happen now? One of the reasons why I have to leave and be at the airport at 51, I'm going there to meet with the team. We have already signed contracts with 88 SMEs who are providing houses in various ways. That process, we spent about 6 months, 7 months working with SMEs, because you will understand that in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro, the unemployment rate is very high. You have close to 50% unemployment rate there. Those SMEs provide income. They put food on the table. So instead of going for big companies in constructing housing, you provide hands-on support to small, medium enterprises or small contractors. And that's what we've done. And that process is going to continue because they need hand-holding from us. They need hand-holding from HDA. But also there's beneficiary administration process that we have to deal with. The human settlements problems in Nelson Mandela are huge. And that is why you will recall that we signed a three-sphere agreement. There is minister, there was the mayor, there was the MEC. We signed a three-party agreement before we intervened in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. There was a council resolution which was passed unanimously by all the council members for us to intervene in Nelson Mandela Bay. There's a cabinet resolution which was also passed for us to intervene and sort out all the challenges, because I can assure you that there is no one sphere of government that will deal with all the problems that we have in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. You need all the three spheres of government to work together, because the problems are huge and they're vast. So that process is going to continue. I'm meeting the administrative team this afternoon at 4 o'clock. We met last week as well to look at some of the contractual glitches and performance issues by some contractors. We have two big projects that we must keep our eyes on, and one of them is it's Joslovo, and the other one is Chiti. Joslovo is big in the sense that you're delivering more than 1,000 units there, and it's also a very big settlement. And Chiti is also taking up about 800. So in Nelson Mandela Bay Metro, we've been working throughout, and we will continue with that work. Working closely with the municipality and working closely with the province. After all, the province is a developer. And as you know, housing is still a concurrent function between national and province. But we use metros through your accreditation processes and through our agreements, implementation protocol agreements, as implementing agencies. I will give some of the questions to my colleague, but there was a question on that I felt I must take in because it's a strategic question on FISP and government employees. You are aware that there is a government that started with the benefit scheme for government employees, what is called the Government Housing Employment Scheme, in short it's called GAS. This was negotiated with the unions. It's managed and driven by GPSE. But human settlement is involved because there is a scheme part of it, and then there is what one you call the subsidy part of it, which is administered by us. So what we've done, we've met with GPSE, and we'll be signing some protocols soon. We would have signed those protocols as early as February. But Treasury wanted to satisfy themselves that this is the right thing to do. And also they were concerned about who should be managing the whole thing, whether it should be managed by GPSA, or it should be managed by us, or we should come up with a hybrid model where we manage the component that talks to consumer education, and we manage the component that talks to FLISP administration. All the government employees who earn less than 15,000 will benefit from FLISP. It is not a double dipping exercise. Some people think that it is a double dipping exercise. They are benefiting twice because they're getting a scheme and then they're getting a subsidy. The scheme was negotiated with the unions as part of your employee benefits. When you are employed, you get certain benefits, certain packages. So that was negotiated with the union, and you can't tamper with that. The 15,000, so the FLISP component, is available to everyone in the country who earns less than 15,000, including government employees. We can't discriminate against them. Everyone, every teacher, every nurse who earns less than 15,000 will benefit out of that. The same way you may find an employee of Pick and Pay getting certain benefits from Pick and Pay, but that employee will also benefit from FLISP. In the mining companies as well, they will get a certain benefits, living out allowance from the mining company, but they can also benefit from FLISP. We've met with Treasury. We've noticed, and we've been very concerned for some time, that FLISP is not performing optimally. It's not at the level where we want it to be. And we put some proposals. Some provinces are not comfortable with that proposal. But perhaps we need to centralize the administration of FLISP. It should be a one-stop shop where it's all managed. Because we are not convinced that provinces are taking it seriously. The numbers are showing already. If you look at how provinces have performed on FLISP over the last 3 years, you will agree with me that the numbers don't show. Now, the banks, private funders, the developers are extremely frustrated in the manner the program is currently managed now by provinces. Even NHFC is not very, happy about how the program is administered. So Treasury is of the view, and they have supported us, that maybe we can administer it in one central point, whether it's going to be administered by NHFC or the new DFI, Human Settlement Development Bank, or it gets administered directly from a component of the department. But we will arrive at a decision. We would prefer that it stays with NHFC so that it doesn't get caught up with the bureaucracy of the department, because I think some of the challenges that provinces are experiencing is that there's a lot of bureaucracy there in provinces, and government by its very nature is bureaucratic, and we would prefer to use entities so that we can benefit from economies of scale, but also transparencies and efficiencies in administering this program. So there is a practical proposal. You'll probably see it in the budgeting proposal for the next financial year, because we are in the middle of the budgeting cycle right now, and we've discussed those things with Treasury. Linked to that, there was a comment made about rental stock. In the rental stock, you are aware that we had some challenges with Shra, but those challenges are far behind us now. We've resolved them. We've got a very effective CEO who's running that organization. The board is very stable. We've got matured people who run their own businesses in the past who are running that board. So we've managed to stabilize the organization. The governance issues are far behind us. The only part that we spend a little bit of time grappling with, which I'm going to have to discuss it this afternoon when I meet with the minister as well, is the review of the subsidy quantum for the RCG, the restructuring and capital grant. As we speak right now, the quantum is sitting at 125, and it's been 125 since 2008. It has never been reviewed, and some of the players in the industry are complaining that this is not sustainable for them because the inflation has not been factored in since 2008. So we made a recommendation to Minister, because Minister has a right every year to review the quantum. But it needs to change from 125 to at least 155,000 per unit. That's one part. The other part talks to the operational aspect of the work, where there's a proposal from SHA that we must move the upper limit to 15,000 so that it's aligned with this. Right now, the upper limit for social housing, for rental housing, is sitting at 9,000. There's a lower limit, which is 1,500 to 7,500, then 7,500 to 9,500. So we're asking that we move the upper limit to 15,000, from 7,500 to 15,000, to make it more sustainable and also to be in line with the other thresholds. The critical filling of the positions, we had two options on this one. We spent some time as management yesterday discussing this. You will recall that, even though it's not stated as such, that we had two adjustments on the budget. There was the September 2015 adjustment, where we had an amount of about 25 million rand added to our budget for compensation of employees. Then in January, there was another adjustment where the 25 million rand disappeared completely for the next financial year, which leaves us with one option, and that option is to fill the positions on contract basis. These are positions that were all funded, that were in the structure, but you can't fill them permanently now. Because you don't have that budget. I think it would be reckless of any DG or HOD to fill positions when you don't know where the budget is going to come from. So we spent some time with Treasury debating this issue, and we said we will try and prioritize the critical positions, but we'll all have to fill them, unfortunately, as contract positions. I think you've heard it for some time now that Treasury has reviewed the wage bill, the compensation of employees in the budget, because if you look at the national budget as a whole, almost 160 billion rand goes into salaries and wages, and that's not a very sustainable situation, because you want to spend the bulk of your money on infrastructure, investment, services, not so much on salaries. So what they've done, they've cut the budget, not only of human settlements. It's not only human settlements that's been affected. All the departments have been affected. They've cut the budget to stabilize the fiscals, and you've heard them talking about fiscal consolidation. The intention is to stabilize the budget because the fiscals are not doing well right now, and also the rating agencies are also watching as to how we're going to stabilize the fiscals. So all of us are affected, which then means you can't just fill your position permanently, and you can't fill your position recklessly. What do we mean by human settlements? Sorry, human resource development. This is a requirement. It's a statutory requirement that now that you have all of your plans and your strategic goals and all your targets, what is your human settlements development? What is your human development resource plan that backs your your resource requirements. All of these things that we have now, we're talking about upscaling on our program management capacity. What does it mean in practical terms? Even if you don't have the money to hire the people that you want to hire, because what it means now is that we will have to optimize the consultation budget. We will have to optimize the goods and services budget if you can't optimize the compensation of employees. So you have to come up with a human resource plan, which simply tells you how you are going to resource this organization going forward, given the resource constraints, the financial resource constraints. Most teachers are in the same situation that we are in. So we have to review the human resource requirement plan. So when you say human resource development plan, it's in the middle. Can we now look at the structure of the organization, look at the strategy, look at the targets, and ask ourselves, what resources do we need? What critical resources do we need to run this organization effectively? So that's basically what it means. Consequence management for non-delivery, it is important. It's extremely important, and it starts with me as an accounting officer. I would love to share your comments that you've made with my colleagues in the provinces and in the metros, so that sometimes when we put pressure on them, they think that we are being petty, because we know that if you don't put pressure on them, it's going to be put on us. So I'm going to ask maybe the colleagues from the parliamentary office to share with us your comments, so that we can, in the technical minimum of testing, we can play your comments so that they can hear from the horse's mouth, and not only from us, the concerns about the performance of the, not only of the charities and other programs as well. We really don't want to come here and sound like we're putting excuses, because I think we have to perform. We have to turn these three targets, the only three targets that are not performing right now in our space. And we are convinced that we will turn the picture around. At least by December, there will be a clear picture of where things are going, because we are getting on the ground. We're sending our professionals to get things going. We have a session which we are planning for next month, because the cabinet, the deputy president, has asked us to present by settlement. If you come to us and you say we have 800 informal settlements that we have marked for upgrading, so they want us to break down this figure by province, by municipality, and by settlement, so that they can track the changes that are taking place. So we have all tried to be operational. We're no longer operating at a high level, strategic level. All of us, we're getting more operational so that we can turn the picture around. The three targets that are not performing is informal settlements upgrading. It's very slow. Two, it is the candidates program. Remember, these are big targets for the five-year term. And then the third one is affordable rental, the social housing targets. If we can get these three performing the latest by December, I'm sure we'll be able to meet most of the targets. The policy-related targets, that's easy. It's in the minister's hands right now. I think we've formulated most of the policies. We were just waiting for minister to give us a go-ahead. So all the other targets are achievable. But the hard targets that are in red, as we speak, are the three targets that I've mentioned. I will then leave most of the questions to my colleagues, and I'll ask them to respond to those questions, and if I can be released in 5 minutes.
Yes, you will be released, and I would like the rest of the management to share the 30 minutes so that you are able to conclude the meeting at 1 o'clock. Is this a follow-up to DG? Because I was not going to allow it if it's a follow-up.
Okay. I'm going to propose, Chair, that we deliver with the fourth quarter report. I'm going to propose that we get a response in writing on the number of discussions, so that we're able to make a proper follow-up on the issue. Maybe the second thing that we should do, maybe, Chair, through your gift, is that maybe to allow the department to come back with a clear plan on the mining house coming watch for the eradication of solar camps in the mining town. I think based on what he has raised, the relationship that he has now established with the mining companies and the private company,
to come and make a presentation to the committee. Those are just my small question, but I think the Chair is important that he is responding right now.
Okay, please, I'm not allowing follow-ups
when
the because I knew that if I allow one and the others will follow, please proceed to the CEO and CFO, whoever wants to start.
Thanks, Chair. I'll address the issue of a couple of quick points, and I think one of them will be the catalytic projects. Chair, the catalytic projects is being managed, and the department has entered into as part of the agreement with the HDA to manage and implement the catalytic projects program. Currently, the HDA, there was a process where they advertised, and as part of that advertisement process, they're in the process where they're busy doing due diligences in respect of those projects. They consist of a basket of private as well as government submitted projects. That process, Minister basically requested us to ensure that in the analysis that it complies and is consistent with all the relevant processes, contractual, financial, compliance, and hence there has been a bit of a delay on that, but that delay has been as a result of ensuring that there's consistency. I think the one issue that we need to be clear about is that in relation to some of the issues that you raised, that members will note, Chair, is that, and I think Member Memezi raised this issue, the planning processes is we make commitments in relation to the plan, and then when you get to implementation, you then discover that those plans have not realized or they're not what you think they are. Hence you have this disconnect between what is planned and what is implemented and what is delivered. And in implementing the catalytic project, if we're going to do it as a national flagship, the issue is that if Minister announces it, it must ensure that whatever is announced in terms of the targets and outputs are realized. But that entire process is available, Chair, and if the committee wants, we can get the HDA to come back and do a detailed presentation on that. The second part was on, I think, Member Khan, I'll just wait, I'm not sure if he's coming back or not, but I'll then take Member Makaus's point on the mining towns and the asbestos. We have made available monies to the Northern Cape, particularly in relation to asbestos. The issue is that what we have asked the provinces not to do is to spend money on assessments. What we have asked them to do, and I think we've made this very clear, that the department, and I think we've got this directive from the minister, is that we will spend money and we will allocate money for removal and replacement of asbestos. That is what we have agreed upon, because it is a responsibility of government where there are instances where there is traces of asbestos either, and in the Northern Cape that's the issue. So we can get the report on what the progress is in particular in relation to replacement, and we've indicated that is a responsibility, that is a state responsibility, particularly in relation to houses that were constructed using state subsidies. So that's what we've indicated. So on the issue of the title deeds and the duplications, Chair, I suppose if we get the, you know, that is not supposed to, it's technically and compliant not possible for two title deeds to be issued for the same property. If it is, then there's probably some kind of corruption or collusion that's happening. And if we get the details of that, we will then take it. I think the DG raised the issue that the Northern Cape has got a very good plan, and we've seen that in the implementation of that plan, the Northern Cape together with the Western Cape will be able to achieve its targets. So they. I think, I'm not sure, but I know we have received a request from the committee to present the full aspect related to title is, and that we will do, and it gives an indication. The issue around the informal settlements. See, I think if you look at the targets, particularly around the MTSF, if you also look at the business plans, the prioritization is an issue that gets done at the provincial and municipal level. And I think we've raised this in the portfolio committee, that provinces and municipalities have not prioritized the informal settlements upgrading program. And hence you have this disconnect between what is happening in relation to the formalization, the proliferation of households in informal settlements, and us being able to achieve it. We've set that target, and I think Minister, together with the DG, have requested that in all those plans that we set, so if you look at the MTSF, it's 2,200 informal settlements impacting on 750,000 households. We will, and we do have a plan in which we want to upscale it. Part of that process is a revision of the funding requirement. We'll be asking for each of the provinces again. And I know it sounds like this, that we're trying to do this, but I think what members need to understand is that the national department, and I suppose this committee will be aware of it, you find yourself in a situation where you've got to navigate between the concurrent responsibilities of housing and human settlements within the Constitution, within the Housing Act, and within the different powers and functions of local authorities. And it's an issue that we need to be very careful, and how we have requested National Treasury is that we must then be able to have an allocation that's dedicated to informal settlements, that's allowed for a specific targets and outputs, in which both politically and administratively we can then hold provinces and municipalities accountable. I think the one issue that, and the last point around this is that, you know, there's this obsession, particularly on USDG, around expenditure of 100%. But the question we ask in ourselves, and we continue to ask ourselves, what is that money buying? Is it making a difference? Is it realizing the outputs and the targets? Because if it's not, then spending 100% and reallocating those monies on a whole range of things doesn't allow us to do that. The last point, which I think needs addressing, is the central demand database. Chair, the central demand database is operational, and it's operational in 8 provinces. So we have the database, and as part of the process is to then ensure that the directive is issued. Each of the provinces, together with the municipalities, will then draw on that database, and anyone allocated a house or allocated into a subsidized house will then meet the criteria and be on that central database. And that's the one issue that we need to indicate. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, in response to Honourable Stroller's question, I must indicate that unfortunately finance questions are technical questions. So, Chair, if you allow me, I will refer to the slide just to play around, but just to make people understand. Because when we talk of the 100%, Honourable Chair, in terms of the department, and I think it will be the transfer payment that we have made in terms of the capacity grant. And I think the distinction that the Honourable Member is coming up with here is that we have indicated that 100% has been spent from our side. But when you get to the metros, there is no 100% expenditure. From our side, when we transfer, that constitutes an expenditure from the National Department of Human Settlements. However, as the CEO had indicated, one would expect 100% from the metros or the provinces. But the crux of the matter is, what did the money buy? But if I can also refer, Honourable Member, to another slide where the very same capacity grant was allocated in terms of the resources. You would get the issues of salaries, that is, people who have been appointed by the metro, by the grant, or using the grant as a source. But you would also get the interim capacity, which talks to the contract workers. Now, the issue and the question that was followed up was,
what systems? And I think it couples with Honorable Member Kanda's question to say what strategies are there in place to ensure that we make sure that this money is being spent. What is happening is that this grant, it having been the last grant and it being the last of its kind, the methodology that we used in the year of its operation, we had three teams that would support the metro in terms of this capacity grant. That would be your CFO branch, the strategy branch under the leadership of the COO, as well as the accreditation unit through the policy unit, whereby we engaged with metros on how this money should be spent and what is it that the money is expected to be spent on, and the rationale of the money not being spent. However, we realized that they have not spent the entire amount, and we were so worried about what is the continuation of this grant, the sustainability of those people that have been appointed through the grant, but by not the metro. But what we did as a department, in terms of the follow-up, we've allocated a 3% from the USDG to sustain the appointments that have been made in the metro. But we are not leaving the matter to the metro. We are making a follow-up and we are engaging with the metro every time in terms of what the grant is buying and what performance and what assistance is it giving to the capacity that we require and is intended to achieve at the end of the day. Ordinarily, the metros would have actually spent their allocation on this, but we made it easy for them because it may well be that the metros did not have money for the additional capacity that we required or that we wanted to have as a national department. So we suggested that the 3% of the USDG be used to sustain this for the next MTEP period. But I must indicate, Chairperson, from the element of the figures through the USDG now, from Honorable Ghana's point of view, whereby the metros have an accrual system that they use. None of the metros will give a specific date when do they close or when they close the book. In most of the instances, or the technical time that the metros will close the book is 81 July because of the accrual system. But some of them go beyond 81 July just to ensure that some of the contractors are paid within the financial year for them not to overstep the money and request the rollover. But we agree to the fact that the rollover that has been requested in the previous was allocated. But in this financial year, the issue is the fear that the rollover may not be approved given the fiscal challenges that we have and the tight economy. So that's the kind of a follow-up that we made. But when we looked at the HSDG and in terms of the rollovers, we had a principal approval from National Treasury in terms of your Limpopo and so the others. But if I can take the members back to the USDG performance, and the question was which metro performance...
9 minutes only.
That's correct, Chairperson. I'll conclude that. It's not much. It's which metros are not performing and which metros are performing. So they differ in terms of the year. Last year we had 5 metros that did not spend the entire grant. This year we still have 5 metros, but not of the same nature. Because if you look at Nelson Mandela, we had 100% last year. This year they did not spend by 3%. Similarly with Johannesburg, they spent their entire allocation last year. This year they retrogressed by 3%. So they vary in terms of that. But because the end of the financial year has just closed, we will determine what were the issues relative to them not spending the entire grant. The issue of the strategy, again, to change the picture in terms of our rollovers, Honorable Scara, it's the fact that the issue of the youth fund, it was just a one-off situation. Unfortunately, we did not conclude the MOU between ourselves and the rural development, and that had to overlap in this financial year. I have not transferred that money because the rollover approval has not been granted by National Treasury. Which is 7.5 million. As soon as that is transferred, that and per the agreement that has been concluded to date, we will not have the situation. But in terms of the SIU and the capacity grant that we spoke of, is the fact that the procurement processes that we utilized at that point in time, we could not approve the variation in terms of the increase in the amount of the investigation. But that has since been approved in this financial. Unfortunately, the year overlapped, because at the time of us approving, the year had closed. So that actually forms part of the rollover. But if the rollover is not approved, it has a consequence of tapping into the current financial year,
which we worry so much because it will definitely affect the operations if that rollover is not approved. And I think, as I indicated, we do have a good relationship with CETA. We did have hiccups there and there with our IT support committee because it had expired. So some of the operations had to be affected by the fact that the IT committee did not sit or was not approved, so it would have constituted an irregular process. But we have actually sorted that out. Chair, from your desk, I think the issue of the USDG, or rather infrastructure grant, to metros that are not actually doing what they are supposed to be doing with their grant, or rather not performing against the non-metros that are using the grant, it's a matter that we also looked at the national, because there are those municipalities that do perform, they do not have the infrastructure grant. But what we did as a department, there's a 2% that we've allocated from the USDG, from the HSDG to the non-metro department to utilize it for infrastructure. So we've made provision for that in the budget. And just so that we're very clear in terms of rollover, but I'm mindful of the fact that we really need to go back to the drawing board in terms of the percentage of the rollover that is permissible to be spent after the financial year. But the PFMA is very clear to say you may, and in brackets it says you may, 5%, but from the capital project. But in terms of the operational budget, you can't spend the money that you don't have. So you definitely have to get approval. Hence, we do not spend the rollovers that we don't have. We wait for the National Treasurer approval. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks. I wanted to say 5%, and then I might be confusing it with the municipalities. The municipalities. Let me to be safe and say the 2%, as I was saying, to be corrected. Thank you very much, Chair. But there are two issues that I would like to, from the Chair, to raise with you. You don't have only one that needs response. The other one is for you for noting. The first one, for our record purposes, COO, you said central database is operating in 8 provinces, and it did not indicate which province, the 9 province, that is not a part of that central database. So we'd like to know the name of that province. That's one province.
Chase the Western Cape, and we are, because the Western Cape had initiated the needs database just prior to the National Department activating their needs database. So what we've agreed with the province is that we will align that process rather than just sort of imposing it on them, because to ensure that there's consistency. So.
And then
the second one, members, is on the first quarter report, page 6. I would like to raise an amendment to be effected by the department on the bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, the bullet 4, that is with the CISOS and STFM have been adopted by National Assembly. We only adopted the SOS 1, CISOS 1, and then the next one still have to come to us, to the postal committee. You haven't presented it to us. But it doesn't have to go to the House. It will come to us, and then if we approve it, then we are done. We can implement. It doesn't have to go to the House. Thank you very much. And I think we can recruit the DG and the team, and then and our visitors, and then we remain for a few minutes to deal with our minutes. Thank you. Thank you very much, National Department, and thank you, the visitors. Members, do we all have a set of minutes? I think we're dealing with only one set of minutes. Yes. I think that the members have been able to read the minutes or last week, coming from the 2 months break. After election, you were able to read the minutes. Are there any amendments that need to be effected on the minutes, page 1? Anything on page 1?
No.
Honorable Stolen?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm trying to understand when the member is not present,
doesn't show his present or apology. What is the status of that?
I think it's an omission because it should indicate that as per the register signed, or the apology must be outlined, and then the attendance as per the signed register. I think that should be corrected if there is an omission on that part. If there was no apology, so it is treated as an absent. Okay, can I move on to that? I think I've given. Okay, there's the next page. Anything on the next page? Nothing. I think the members, they are agreeing on everything that is written on the minutes. The last page. Anything on the last page? Page 3? Nothing. Can we then, if there are no amendments, can we then adopt the minutes? Can I have the mover and the seconder? Honorable Memezi, move for the adoption. Any seconder? Honorable Ghana, second the adoption of the minutes. The minutes is actually adopted. Thank you very much, members. Can I just have a few minutes for the ANC component to remain? Thank you very much. And we are all being excused. Thank you.